Well, it finally got us.
Yeah, we got COVID.
And it was not fun.
Yeah, but it wasn't that bad either.
No, it was mild as COVID goes. We just had fever and body aches for a few days.
3 days in bed.
Yeah.
That we could hardly get out and do anything. But I think for me, the worst than those 3 days was just about 2 weeks of not having any energy
yeah.
or strength or ability to do anything without needing a nap.
Oh my goodness. We're so exhausted. Even after we got better, it was crazy.
Yeah. And when we finally recovered from COVID in January, we had a cyclone here.
The very next week.
Yeah.
After we had COVID.
So Cyclone Anna or Anna?
Anna.
Cyclone Anna hit from Zamba south and into Mozambique. Of course, it hit Madagascar before it came to mainland Africa. And it did a lot of damage, not necessarily here, but especially in the Lower Shiri, where we have about half the churches that we serve and minister to.
Yeah, people's houses and crops just gone.
Yeah, with major flooding along the Shiri River.
Roads gone.
Yeah. So I haven't made it to the Lower Shiri yet because the road was knocked out. And finally, they have made a temporary road so that we can get down there. And I'll be going down there to survey things next week. We were supposed to have a pastor's school next week in the Lower Shiri, but talking with the team and discussing with the pastors, it just wasn't a good time for them together. So we canceled that, but I am going to go down there and meet with some of the pastors, pray with them, survey the damage, try to give them some gifts and supplies to help them out. But then the next week, we'll have our pastor's school here in Zamba. That's the last week in February. And then we'll be right back into Shepherd's Academy.
Yeah. And you're looking forward to having a guest preacher?
Yeah. If everything goes all right, Pastor Zach from Overland Church in Fort Collins, Colorado, is going to be here for the school here in Zamba and teaching about preaching. So teaching a preaching class, and we're looking forward to having him and encouraging him and being encouraged by him. He and I went to college together at Boyce College and We met during orientation, and we were in the same Howdy group.
Howdy group.
Yeah, that's what they called it.
That's like
the
special.
Small groups of students during orientation. We were in the same Howdy group, and of course, now he's a big shot pastor and everything. So,
yeah.
But we're excited to have him. I don't know if you know this, but it's going to be Valentine's Day weekend this weekend.
Yeah. And you know how much we always go big for Valentine's Day.
We're not big about Valentine's Day. We never have been.
No.
But especially now, all of our kids' birthdays and your birthday and Christmas, it just is all during the season. It just feels like we don't need the pressure of an extra
thing to have to celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you're lucky that I've never been fussy about it.
Yeah. But I still love you.
And I still love you.
Yeah. So today our show is about the missionary's marriage on the mission field, whatever you want to call it, and the challenges and our experience. We're not experts. You know,
we're not
like 30-year missionaries or anything, but we're just going to talk about our experience, and maybe people can learn or learn not what to do. I don't know from our reflections. I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacey Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more. So the missionary's marriage, it's an important topic. It's an important topic that's covered by lots of missions agencies as people are discerning whether or not they're called to the mission field. It's something that, of course, continues to be relevant for years, your entire life, obviously.
Yeah.
What makes marriage on the mission field harder in some ways than marriage in your home culture?
Everything. Probably the biggest part, I think, is that there's a different level of stress.
Yeah.
When you're living on the mission field, it's just kind of a constant stress level that everything is harder. Everything is...
It's not that it's different types of things necessarily, although some things may be unique, but a lot of it's the same things that people struggle with in marriage in America. It's just that there's a different level of intensity. Is that...
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just all feels harder, you know, and maybe part of that is because generally you have a lot less support than you would in the US.
Yeah. You're away from your support structure, your families, a church that you speak the same language and that you have brothers and sisters that you can easily converse about difficult subjects with.
It's a lot more isolating.
Yeah. And then on top of that is the extra stresses of being cross-cultural, always operating in a culture that's not your own is incredibly wearing.
Yeah, it's mentally exhausting.
Mentally exhausting. That's a good way to put it.
And so you're less on your A game when it comes to your other relationships, like with your spouse and your kids.
Yeah, because you're always thinking like on multiple levels instead of just being able to think immediately about the issue like you would in your own culture where you can just assume everything that is normal in your culture.
Yeah, and you're always translating languages and currency and measurements and all of that. Also, you're just...
And, you know, how people are perceiving you is different and you're thinking about, you know, your public witness. And then you've mentioned currency. I think another aspect that makes it harder is just the financial side.
Yeah.
Finances is one of the biggest pressures on marriage, period. You know, it's one of the major...
No matter where you live.
Yeah. And when you are a missionary, most missionaries don't get paid a lot. And we don't get paid a lot.
Yeah.
And so there are just a lot of stresses. Like if we look at our peers and what they're making and the life choices that they're making and the things they're able to save for their kids to go to college, we're not.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of issues just kind of put a lot of extra pressure on marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add to that list?
I don't know. Those are pretty exhaustive lists.
Yeah. So before coming to the mission field, one of the kind of controversial topics in the missionary world is do both spouses need to be called? And this has a lot to do with when people are applying with missions agencies. Some missions agencies believe that both spouses need to be called and they evaluate both spouses very carefully. Other agencies might not believe in that. We even know of some missionaries where they believe that the husband is the missionary, but the wife isn't a missionary.
Yeah, she's just the wife.
And therefore, you know, it's just her calling to go do whatever he is supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they don't believe that the spouse has to be called. So let me ask you as a wife and I think a missionary, you know, do you think that you have to be called? Or when we're evaluating team members, does the spouse have to be called?
I think absolutely they do. I think it's critical that the spouse also feel the call to the mission field, because I mean, I can't imagine persevering through the last 4 years if I didn't feel called to be here.
Yeah.
If I would rather be in America near my parents or whatever, I can't imagine persevering through what we've been through, and it would make the stress on our marriage a million times harder, mm-hmm. because a spouse that's not called is going to be miserable. And when the mom is miserable, the kids are miserable. And when the rest of the family is miserable, the husband's not going to last long.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I'm not looking at the data. I know there's been surveys and stuff about this, but I just from our experience, the top two factors on missionary longevity, number one is probably team dynamics. Mm-hmm. So when there's not a good team dynamic, there's conflict that can't be resolved in the team, missionaries quit and go home. And number two is the marriage issue of the spouse, not usually the wife, not yeah. feeling the same level of calling as the husband, and therefore the husband's not able to continue and they go home.
Yeah. When mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen kids in missionary families that hate the country they live in, hate the people. And they're not getting that from nowhere. If, you know, you're very positive as a family about living here and loving the people, then the kids are going to reflect that. So when, you know, the kids are very dissatisfied, usually, I mean, there are exceptions, especially with teenagers, but usually that's coming from inside the home, from the father or the mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think where this gets a little confusing maybe is when we think about what calling is. So maybe you grew up in a church tradition where you heard somebody talk about being in a church service and having this overwhelming God experience, you know, maybe even almost an audible voice of God mm-hmm. saying, go to Malawi or go to this people group.
Yeah.
And when we think of call more in that, you know, strictly supernatural sense, mm-hmm. then there are women who might say, I don't feel called. But when we think of calling as, is this my gifting? Is it my passion? Do I feel an urgency for it? Do I feel a draw towards it?
Yeah.
That is God-given. Are there other people in my life, whether it's missionaries or pastors, affirming that, you know, we're set apart by God for this type of work mm-hmm. based on our gifting and personality and everything? You know, that's that it might not be a moment that someone experiences, but that's still God calling you. And that for may sure. be, you know, more of what you experience.
For sure. And more of just a willingness
yeah.
to go, like you said, that desire and draw.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, with spouses, you don't really feel that sense of calling all at the same time, which mm-hmm. is where a lot of people really struggle. The husband may, sometimes it's the wife. The wife may really feel a sense of calling and the husband doesn't, and the husband does and the wife doesn't. And I think it's an act of faith. This is God's mission. It's not our mission. And so, you know, if I'm a husband whose wife doesn't feel the sense of calling, then I need to be patient. If he's really in this,
yeah.
then he's going to give her that sense of calling too eventually.
Yeah.
And I have to be careful, I think, especially as a husband, not to
steamroll.
Steamroll or guilt my wife into feeling a sense of calling or talk her into it in some way.
Yeah. And make sure that she's not just going along with it as a out of a sense of wifely submission.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's not going to work out very well.
No, it's not.
Because when all those pressures and challenges we talked about kind of start coming down upon you, then yeah. that's not going to stand up to the difficulties that people face.
While you were saying that, it reminded me of, you know, people have the same conversation around adoption. Mm. Often one spouse or the other is more ready for it. Yeah. And it's always that conversation of you have to wait until you're both on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I would encourage, you know, I'm usually counseling men or young men about this area, so I'll just speak to them. I would encourage you, if you feel a sense of calling and your wife doesn't, I would just talk to the Lord. I wouldn't necessarily talk to my spouse about it. You know, yeah. let her know that you feel this sense, but don't just make it a point of conversation. Just let the Lord do the work.
Yeah. And that makes a good segue into the next thing that we wanted to discuss, which is what should you look for in somebody that you're dating?
Yeah. So we get the privilege of interacting with a lot of college students and young people who are interested in a call to missions. And most of them are single already. Well, everybody's single already. That's how you start out. But they're single, and so they're thinking in terms of, I want to get married, but I also feel called to missions. How do I evaluate, is this person the right person?
And that's a really hard question for me, because like I felt a call to missions in high school, and then I met you, and you didn't want to be a missionary. You wanted to be a pastor.
Well, to clarify, when I was 14 and I first felt called to ministry, it was to missions, but, and I'd never wanted to be a pastor. Like I was a deacon's son, and I had no desire to do what my pastor did because I knew how awful it was half the time. And, but then when I was about 18 and a senior in high school, God just gave me a desire to be a pastor. So when we met, my sense of calling had kind of shifted. And obviously now we see how the Lord was using that, because I couldn't teach pastors if I hadn't been a pastor.
Yeah.
But when we met, my greatest desire was to be a pastor in America. And so yeah, that was very troubling to you.
It was really hard for me. And I remember when we first started spending some time together, I had a conversation with my friend Katie, and I said, I don't want to be a pastor's wife. And she was dating Corey at the time. And she said, I don't really want to be a pastor's wife either, but I want to be Corey's wife. And so I'll be a pastor's wife if that's what that means.
Yeah.
And I've just always felt like those words were so wise. And it made me decide, you know, everything else aside, did I want to be your wife?
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like, I really felt like that was laying what I felt like was my call to missions down for what I felt like was this other thing that God was leading me to at the time. And I didn't really understand it, but it really felt like, okay, God, I'm just going to trust you to hold both of these things in each hand.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the wisest things. Ways to approach dating is to just simply remember the Lord is my shepherd.
Yeah.
He's guiding me. And yet, on the one hand, yes, be very particular about the person you marry, because you're going to be stuck with them the rest of your life. You know, but on the other hand, there's a sense in which people are too picky.
Yeah, when you were in Bible school, you met people who like wouldn't date anyone who wasn't a missions major, right?
Yeah, and we used to joke that there were some girls in Bible college that in order to see if it was the person they should marry, they'd take them down to the Ohio River and see if they could walk on water. So there's a sense in which, you know, you can be so overwhelmed by the commitment you're making that you really shut down
Yeah.
You know, your openness to how God's leading you. But on the other hand, you know, have high standards.
For sure.
And that's the whole thing about the reason you're dating or courting or whatever you want to call it, is that you're evaluating this person. Do you want to marry them? But if you feel, and everybody else in your life feels like it's a good fit.
Yeah.
And God's leading you in this way, then, you know, like you said, you can trust that the Lord is going to work all of this out the way he wants to work it out.
But if you feel like God may be calling you to the jungle or the bush, you probably don't want to start a relationship with a girl who wears a full face of makeup and takes an hour to fix her hair and always, you know, is as prissy as possible.
Not that there's anything wrong with makeup. As your pastor from Union Baptist, Brother Mike, used to teach, you know, that
a little red paint never hurt an old barn.
A little red paint never hurt an old barn.
And maybe if you're feeling called to missions in a modern European city, she might be a good fit for that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just something to consider.
But at the same time, you're looking for someone who is adaptable. And if this is someone who has to have everything just so,
yeah,
they're probably not going to make it in another culture, whether it's in France or it's in Malawi or somewhere in between.
Yeah. But I feel like the bigger than all of this, the thing which, you know, was always the desire of my heart and was something that I think was the biggest attraction I had to you when we met, was I was always just looking for the godliest person I could find.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that I wasn't called to a normal life and a normal job. And I was just always looking for somebody who had kind of a next level commitment to God and you know, does that make sense?
Yes, exactly. Godliness. Boom, boom, chicka, boom. Cue romantic music.
But really, I was. And that's what attracted me to you, was that I knew that you were exactly the kind of person that I had always been looking for. And you loved God more than anything else, and you sought to follow him with all your heart.
And that's just the recipe of a good marriage, is if somebody's godly, that basically equals humble, and whatever problems you're going to face, you can get through it if you have humility, if you have love for Christ, first of all. And that
do humble people brag about their own humility?
I didn't say I'm humble. I'm just saying
that was the logical progression there.
You called me godly, and then I said godly people are humble, but I didn't say that I was either one.
I know, but doesn't that follow your train of thought?
Anyways, but I'd say that's your first number one, you know, that's what you're looking for. But then secondly, is that adaptability, flexibility. You know, just you can't be a prissy woman and live in an environment like we live in.
No, my first question to people is always, do you like camping?
Yeah.
Because life here feels a lot like camping some days.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to guys and I was saying to them, you know, is this the type of woman that you could imagine she could go a month without electricity, or she could go a month without running water in her home? And if you can see her doing those things, then yeah, she's the type of woman who can make it in this type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, allowing, you know, seeing a woman who's been on mission trips is helpful to one degree, because if she went on a mission trip to a majority world country and freaked out, then that's a bad sign. Because when you're on a mission trip, you're being pampered by host missionaries. Like, they're taking care of everything for you and pampering you so you'll have a good experience. And if you're freaking out in that situation,
you're definitely not going to make it on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So any other advice for young single people interested in the mission field?
I don't know.
How about for, you know, we think mostly about the guys I'm talking to.
Uh-huh.
If you're a girl, how do you handle that? What are you looking for in the guy? And you said godliness. Is there anything else?
I mean, that was really the biggest thing for me. And it also, you know, just that adaptability. And for me, it was some kind of call into ministry. Yeah. I knew that I wanted something more.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know they were young when we were young. I guess we're not young anymore. We know women who went to, say, Bible college or seminary because they sensed a calling to missions. They met a guy who wanted to be a pastor. They married him, and now they're a pastor's wife.
Yeah.
And yet God is still using that passion for missions in their lives.
For sure.
And in their church. And so just, you know, follow the Lord, find someone godly that you can respect,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he's going to guide you where he wants you to be. Now it's time for our cultural tidbit, and today for our cultural tidbit, we have our friend and coworker, special guest on the podcast, Isaac Zimbili, who is now married. I think the last time you were on the podcast, you were just engaged.
I was still single, engaged, yes.
So now you're married, been married for over a year. You have a baby named Jedediah.
Yeah.
And so today's podcast is on the theme of the missionary's marriage, but we thought we could give a little introduction to everyone about the state of marriage in Malawi, which is very complicated.
Very complicated, right.
So can you kind of give American and Western listeners just kind of an introduction to how marriage works in Malawi?
So in Malawi, basically, we have four types of marriages, if we may say. So we have a marriage that is done traditionally, and there's that marriage which is done by government officials, where you go to the district commissioner and fill some forms. And then we have the marriage which we do in the church. But there is also the last one where people just live in. And all of those are what complicates marriage.
Yeah. And some of these can overlap, right? Because
yes.
You could, like, for example, when Stacy and I got married, we went to the government, we got our certificate, and then we were married by our pastor.
Yeah.
So we kind of had a church marriage, even though it wasn't in the church, but it was by the pastor. But also it's recognized by the government. Mm. But in Malawi, there are these different types, and you can go to the chief in the village,
right,
and just be recognized by the chief, give him a little gift.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you could go to the government's offices in your district and get the proper certificate.
And
there's certain rights and things that go along with that. You can get married in your church, and it doesn't have to be with the government certificate necessarily. But then what we see happening more and more today is just he got her pregnant,
right.
So they start living together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called marriage. They think of it as marriage. Whereas in America, like if you're living together, you know you're living together.
Yeah, not
and you're not married. But here, it's like the same thing.
Right. Actually, so immediately when you impregnate somebody, they always assume that you have already married that person. So you can't even back out. It's marriage.
Yeah. But at the same time, you can back out because there's nobody like overseeing you and keeping you held accountable in any way to your vows.
Yes, yes, yes.
So like you get tired of her, you just go on, you go live with somebody else.
Absolutely. That's true also.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a very important ingredient to add there. That in as much as when you impregnate somebody, everyone expects that you have to marry that person. But along the way, you are still flexible even to come out of that kind of marriage.
Yeah. And of course, in Malawi, we also have polygamy, which in, say, Muslim cultures, that may be like a man living with multiple women. Mm. But when we talk about polygamy in other areas that aren't Muslim, that are more traditional religiously or maybe kind of nominally Christian, it's like somebody, he has a wife here with children, and then in another village, he might have another wife with children. It's not that he has multiple women in the same home.
No, no. So to just give a quick example for our chiefs, for example, they might be living with their wife in their village, but they have other women, their wives in other villages. So they might sleep this night here, and then the other night they'll sleep at that wife's home. And then, so they have multiple homes where they can go and sleep in.
And of course, this gets even more complicated because so many Malawians travel to South Africa to work and things. They have families there. They have families here. It's a real mess and a real challenge to ministry. So I think that we probably need to do a podcast just about this topic.
Yeah. I think, there is just a lot to discuss about how complicated marriage is. And this actually puts the church in confusion when maybe there is a disagreement or they want to cancel. We find ourselves very hard to help in a situation where their marriage is so very much complicated.
Yeah, and it's difficult for the church to practice church discipline in matters of adultery and divorce when people are just very, very confused about what marriage is and what the standards are biblically and how their culture is speaking to it. So, yeah, definitely we have planted the seeds of another episode. So thank you for coming in today. How are you married, by the way, since I said you're married? What kind of marriage do you have?
Now, we were married in the church, the presence of God, and they said our vows, and soon we'll be doing the marriage certificate at the government.
Yeah, so I did the wedding. So if you don't, you know, keep your vows, then I'm going to come after you with a panga knife.
Yeah,
and make sure you go back home and do what you're supposed to do. So, all right, thanks, Isaac.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk maybe a little bit more about our own marriage. And
yikes.
I mean, no, we don't have to tell all our dirty laundry and every issue that we've faced, but we've had struggles in the last 4 years, probably the most significant struggles that we've ever had in our marriage.
For sure. It's been a ridiculously difficult 4 years.
Yeah. I think there were some situations that for the first time in, we've been married now for 15 and a half years. So for the first time in over a decade, we've been kind of on separate sides, almost like we were split against each other by some of the things we faced, which was a unique experience for us.
Yeah. It was super hard on both of us.
Yeah. And I'd say that was really troubling. Like I never had before the sense that we might not make it.
And I never had that sense, even here. But yeah, I know, I mean, you said you did.
It was just a momentary thing, you know, maybe a day or so that I was just really surprised and afraid. But just even having the thought was confusing and scary.
Yeah.
And because I just never even entered my mind that we we wouldn't make it, or that we'd live in some sort of marriage where we just coexisted or something, because we're just, I mean, generally we're pretty passionately in love with one another.
We are, yeah.
And so, you know, to face those struggles and have those thoughts, like, is this where that's heading? That was very, very troubling, very
scary.
But
it wasn't. It wasn't where that headed. It
wasn't. And it was because we love the Lord and we're, you know, we go to him in prayer and humility, and we're able to come to one another and say when we've been wrong, and we work through that. But just generally through that season, I think we learned to take care of our marriage a little bit better.
We did, yeah.
When we lived in the U.S., I was a student and a pastor. We were away from family already in the U.S.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a great support network a lot of the time. And so we might would have went on a date once or twice a year.
Yeah. I remember very rarely getting to go on a date.
Yeah. And especially having a young child with special needs, it was just very difficult to trust anybody else to take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't in the habit of thinking about,
and we didn't have enough money to go on dates.
And we didn't have enough money. Thankfully in Malawi, we, even though we don't make a ton of money right now, we make more than we ever did before. And, and thankfully restaurants are much cheaper here.
Yeah.
We went to a restaurant last week in the capital, which was apparently fancy. And when I got the bill, I was like, whoa, this is like in America. Like, this is...
Yeah, we were shocked when we got the bill.
Yeah, so...
we didn't look into that one very closely. I looked and saw that they had some gluten-free things. And so I was excited to try it. Yeah. And then we were like,
oh, it was
wow.
Fine. It was a splurge. We were in the capital. So, but anyways, it was just like a reminder that when we go out to eat in America with... All of our
kids.
Children and their teenagers, some of them now.
Their teenage appetites.
It's like even a cheaper restaurant's going to be about $100.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Probably more now because everything is expensive apparently now.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
But anyways, that was a rabbit trail. Anyways, we learned to prioritize our marriage.
Yeah, and one of those
situation.
Things has been dates. Yeah. Our Friday date day, we go for lunch on Fridays, and that has been really, really life-giving to our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so, so important. And it's not like every Friday we have these deep heart-to-heart talks. I mean, sometimes we do,
yeah,
but mostly it's just sitting together.
Yeah.
And spending time together that is just the two of us, that just refreshes everything. We've also made it a priority more often to have getaways.
Yeah.
Just the two of us. That's
And by more often you mean ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, that if we can go on dates in America, we certainly never actually got away.
Yeah. When we did, it was like, hey, I have to go do my comprehensive exams in Louisville. Maybe mom can watch the kids.
So yeah.
we made that into a trip, while I was taking all kinds of tests.
But I know we've mentioned her on the podcast before, and we're just so blessed here to have Jude's amazing tutor, Grace.
Yeah.
And, we trust her with Jude. She's amazing. And so she's the one who watches all of them while we go on our dates. And she's watched them for a night or two for us to get away for the weekend.
Yeah.
We just really can't be thankful enough for her.
Yeah. And we are just so blessed by those times to have that extended time. Like to have a couple of hours every Friday is amazing. But to have a day or two where you're just unplugged and relaxed with one another is another level.
It is amazing. And there's nobody fighting or crying or mama.
And somebody else is cooking for you.
Oh, that's
and,
the best.
You know, you just get to do what you want to do. And, you know, there's a sense in which there's that sacrificial missionary mentality where mm-hmm. in the back of your head, you're thinking, I shouldn't be enjoying something like this.
Yeah.
I should be, you know, sacrificing and I shouldn't mm-hmm. have to. But when you think about longevity for your marriage and longevity in your calling, if you don't make those things a priority, you're just not going to.
You're going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one other thing I thought of in talking about ways that we've strengthened and worked on our marriage is that I feel like counseling has been huge for yeah. both of us.
Yeah.
I started meeting on Zoom with a counselor, a Christian counselor. It's been a couple of years now, hasn't mm-hmm. it? I started out mostly to talk about some parenting struggles that I was having. And then that's just kind of blossomed into just the most amazingly helpful thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And I really don't know where I'd be without her.
Yeah.
And you started, what, just a few months ago?
Yeah, I guess it was back in like July or somewhere around then I started meeting with a counselor. So to just clarify, it's not that we're doing like marriage counseling together. It's right. just that we're both individually meeting with Christian counselors to have somebody to talk about issues with, and a person who is confidential, a person who isn't like hyper connected with everybody that we know. So it doesn't feel like we're gossiping or anything. It's just,
yeah.
it's someone that we can truly talk to and they can reflect on the situations we face and help us handle them. And it has been, I was super nervous.
You really didn't want to do it.
I didn't. And it took me a long time to say yes to it. And part of it was just a pride factor that I just never thought of myself as somebody who needed counseling. But once I did, and the first couple of times I got so nervous and stressed out, like the hour or two before I was snapping at everyone because I was stressed about the counseling and
yeah.
taking it out on you and the kids probably. But then once I got comfortable with my counselor, it has just been incredibly helpful to have somebody to help me work through numerous issues
yeah.
That I face that have, you know, really kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, I just went through a period where I just felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me
yeah.
because of different situations that we had faced. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to get back up. And of course, when you feel that way, and there's great anxiety that you're dealing with, that's going to have damage on your marriage.
And on every and other on your, part of your
yeah,
life.
Yeah, and on your parenting and everything. So if you don't have somebody who can help you deal with those things, then it's going to have a snowball effect. And I'm thankful that you encouraged me to do it. And it's, I'd say if you're a missionary, especially, but in ministry period, and you don't have somebody who's safe to talk to,
yeah,
then you need to start finding that right now.
And there are organizations, and this is how we got connected with our counselors. There are organizations out there who will do free or reduced cost counseling for missionaries or people in ministry.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most amazing ministries
yeah.
that a person could have is mm-hmm. to donate their time to help missionaries and ministers just to keep their sanity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think another thing that has strengthened our marriage just within the last few months is our renewed commitment to our health and exercise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's been so good because as my very favorite...
I knew you were going to quote this. I knew it was coming.
Because as my favorite quote of all time from Legally Blonde says, exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands.
And I'm alive as proof that this is a true syllogism.
It is. It is. The endorphins from exercise makes such a big difference.
Yeah. So you got into running. Mm-hmm. I got into cycling. And then I was so jealous of your running that I got into running again.
Yeah, you haven't cycled much lately.
Yeah, which it's been rainy season, so I've been afraid to get out there and get stuck or something. We are really kind of keeping this going probably for the longest period that we have in our marriage. Like, we've always had these spurts mm-hmm. of, okay, we're going to be runners again.
But yeah.
It never has lasted, but this is kind of going.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. I've got some big goals for this year. Some races that I want to do in America. And so I've really got my eye on the prize. I'm trying to really train and build up my strength and endurance. So I'm really excited.
Yeah. And the most important thing is that when your body is healthy, it helps you mentally. It helps your marriage.
Helps you endure the stresses of parenting,
yeah,
and overseas life.
And in a place like Malawi that it's difficult, you know, physically to do ministry here, like
yeah.
it wears you out to focus on your bodily strength, in order to be able to endure ministry and not be exhausted.
Yeah.
After you've gone out and you've done some sort of ministry, you know, your body's used to enduring that. That's very important.
It is. And it's not easy, especially in a place like this. You know, the girls don't love running with me because we get stared at everywhere we go.
Yeah.
We're a spectacle. And you really have to learn to ignore that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, as women here, we have to run in more modest clothes than we would if we were in America. I saw a thing recommending what kind of clothes to wear in different temperatures on Instagram. And it wasn't until it got down to like the 30s that it said you should switch from shorts to capris. And I laughed. I was like, I run in capris when it's 95 degrees outside because that's what I have to do here.
Yeah. Yeah. I run at sunrise, which is a little bit better. There's a lot of people out at sunrise because, you know, people wake up with the sun, but it's less than if I was running at, you know, 10 a.m. or in the afternoon. And so I get hassled a little bit less.
Yeah. And you said there are quite a few Malawians who are running at that time,
too. That's the time period that most Malawians exercise. So, you know, I see a lot of guys out running and women at that time, whether they're, you know, doctors or in the military or something. So it's not as unusual. And so I kind of fit in a little bit better, which I don't like not fitting in. So,
yeah, nobody does.
Yeah. What else? How else do we strengthen our marriage? I think one thing we should add is that over the course of our 15-year marriage, we've really learned to communicate with one another.
Oh, that's what I was going to say too.
Okay.
Yeah, because I know we both vividly remember how when we were engaged and first married, we did not have great communication skills.
No.
And mostly you. Can we be honest? It was mostly you.
Hey, it takes two.
You had never had a serious relationship before. Mm-hmm. You really didn't know how to be in a serious relationship.
Mm-hmm. I thought we weren't going to air our dirty laundry.
But you would, if I did something that bothered you, you would just like clam up and get all passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And I was constantly being like, you have to tell me when you're mad. I yeah. can't read your mind.
And you, on the other hand, this was why it was so difficult. You are basically oblivious.
Yes.
So like you were not picking up my signals at all.
Sometimes intentionally, because I didn't want to reward your passive aggressive behavior.
So
I was trying to make you use your words.
That was a recipe for disaster, but I learned to be more direct in my communication, and you learned, I think, to kind of temper yourself on the other end and be more responsive to my needs. And
yeah, I try. That doesn't really come very naturally to me.
Yeah, but you're much better than when we were married, and so. Anyways, we just have a much more open and direct communication now, which means that when we face things, you know, sometimes we raise our voices with one another and we you know, say very directly what we're feeling and what we're thinking. Like, we communicate very directly now. And so, and to some people that may seem like a problem, but it's actually a good thing.
It is. It's a very good thing. So I would recommend people read books about communication. There was some book I read when early on in our marriage where we learned the phrase shared mental model.
Yeah.
And we still use that.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, we just didn't have a shared mental model about this.
Yeah, and which means I was thinking about it in one way and you're thinking about it in another way.
Yeah, and that's what caused frustration or confusion or whatever.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you just to learn how to be really good communicators.
Yeah, because, you know, if you can't talk about the things you're experiencing in a healthy way, then that's just going to cause a bigger explosion down the road.
For sure.
Yeah. So we had Isaac on the show during the cultural tidbit talking about marriage in Malawi, which just is an introduction to how poor a lot of marriages are here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're poor in America too.
Right.
You know, but it's a really significant problem even in the church mm-hmm. here. So our marriage as missionaries, it's not just about us persevering in our calling, but it's also a part of our calling.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know you've had a lot of this discussion with the women you lead in Bible study and in the pastors' wives conferences. So how does our marriage, how is it a part of our ministry, a part of our teaching?
I feel like we've just been able to really model what a biblical marriage should look like mm-hmm. to the people that we work with here. And even some of the staff, I feel like some of the single staff especially have learned, oh, this is what I want in a marriage.
Yeah.
Because they've seen it in ours. And like you mentioned in my Bible study group, and it's funny, at first they would kind of dismiss it as, well, that's how you do it in America. Like, that's your American marriage, but our Malawian marriages are different. And I had to go to great lengths to convince them this is not a normal American marriage either.
Yeah.
American marriages are pretty messed up too, but this is a biblical marriage where we're both seeking to do what the Bible teaches us, you know, about marriage.
And, yeah. And I mean, there are cultural differences. Like, we treat while you're a submissive wife, we treat one another much more like equals and partners. Whereas in a Malawian marriage, some of them, it's more like the woman is a servant, a slave.
Yeah.
You know, the husband is very domineering. And, you know, there's always the question of how much of that is cultural and how much of that is sinful. And that's really more for them to work out through the leadership of the Holy Spirit to a degree. But at the same time, the fact that I love you, that's a command. That's from the Bible. It's not just like a cultural thing. The fact that you respect me, that's a command from the Bible. It's not just a cultural thing. And
the fact that we're faithful to each other.
Yeah.
That's very countercultural.
Yeah. And
both, you know, in America and here, honestly.
And in, you know, when Paul and Peter and Jesus are teaching on these things, it's countercultural.
Yeah.
you know, it's all throughout the world, marriages are bad because people are sinners. And it may look a little bit different here or there, but if you're going to have a marriage that's submitted to God's word, it's going to be different from whatever your culture is.
Yeah. And yeah, and that's what I try to emphasize to the ladies I teach, and I think you do to your students as well, is just that I'm not trying to teach you to have an American marriage. I'm trying to teach you to have a biblical marriage.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's kind of like sometimes a pastor who's single will feel like he can't teach on marriage because he's single.
Yeah.
But you can teach what the Bible says.
Yeah.
And, you know, later, if you're married, then you're going to have greater wisdom and insight into those things and more experience. But the basics of what it says is going to stay the same.
Yeah.
And so in a similar way, even though we haven't experienced what it's like to be in a Malawian cultural marriage, we still have the scriptures that make it very clear. And the scriptures are not just for Americans. The scriptures are for everybody all around the world.
Yeah. And this reminds me of a previous podcast that we did where we talked about why it's important for missionaries to live where they minister.
Yeah.
You know, and to really root their lives there so that the people that they're ministering to can see their actual lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, like you said, even with our staff, which I'd say we are more on the same page with than necessarily the women from our church who are in your Bible study who are more ignorant of the Bible, like they're still learning. Mm-hmm. Our staff is learning, like, wow, this is how Josh treats Stacy and this is how she treats him. And, you know, even like, you know, the female staff that I have, you know, just to know that I don't flirt with them.
Yeah.
I don't touch them physically.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, there's a clear line that I don't cross with them, even in a joking way.
Right.
Because for the one thing, that's dangerous and you shouldn't do it even in America. But in Malawi, there is an expectation that every husband will cheat.
For sure. Yeah. When before Isaac and Susan got married, I was having a conversation with some of the single female staff, and I made the comment that we were talking about how common it is for even pastors and ministers to be unfaithful. And I made the comment, I'm confident that Isaac is going to be faithful to Susan. And they laughed.
Yeah.
They laughed. That's how confident they were that he wouldn't, and which sent me into a tailspin. I was like, Josh, you have to talk to Isaac, because is he going to be faithful to Susan? And of course Josh did. And
but
Isaac is definitely very committed to being faithful to Susan.
Yeah, it wasn't about Isaac at all.
Right.
Isaac, it was about
the culture.
Yeah. Just every husband's going to be unfaithful. No husband is going to be monogamous.
Right.
And
even pastors, even ministry leaders.
And so, you know, while being, you know, whether it's the Billy Graham rule of, you know, what the
never
Billy Graham,
being alone with a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever you use in the US, I feel like it's even more important in Malawi to not cross any line, even in a joking way, to make sure that everybody sees he is absolutely faithful to his wife.
Yeah.
You know, as it says in 1 Timothy 3, we're required to be a one-woman man, which doesn't just mean not divorced or not polygamous. It means he's completely devoted to one woman.
Yeah.
I only have eyes for you.
Wow.
Yeah. That song always comes in my head when I'm teaching that passage, but I've never sang it before.
It's just a little bonus for all of our listeners.
So I'm just very thankful that I have an amazing wife who is beautiful but not prissy, flexible and smart and a good communicator, and makes me better.
Oh, and I am so thankful to have an amazing man who is all of those things too. You're beautiful, but not prissy too.
Thank you. I try not to be prissy.
Yeah. And finally, it's time for your favorite segment.
Everyone's favorite segment.
What you reading?
What you reading? So I've been trying to catch up a little bit on some of my missiology reading. I actually have we have a friend who's doing his PhD. I think his PhD in missiology. And so I was like, give me all your syllabi.
Because
I want to know what is, you know, current in missiology right now. So I've been reading a pair of books by Christopher J.H. Wright, who is a British Old Testament scholar and really involved in missions. And the first book is called The Mission of God, and the second book is called The Mission of God's People. And the first one is very much a theology of missions, biblical theology of missions. And then the second one is meant to be a little bit more practical, although it's still very heavy on the theology. And these two books, I think there are a lot of points that I disagree with him about. For one thing, his definition of what is involved in missions is much more broader than mine would be. But he is someone who is trying to take the scripture seriously and really handle it carefully and draw his understanding of missions from the scriptures, not just from experience or looking at the need or whatever. So it's a pair of books that I think everyone who is going into missions needs to engage, even though you might not agree with everything he says.
Interesting.
Yeah. What you reading?
Well, I mentioned on the last podcast that I was reading the biography of Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
I'm still working through that one very slowly. I haven't been reading much lately. I've been doing a lot of Duolingo lately.
Yes.
And that has cut into the time that I would have ordinarily spent reading.
Yeah.
But
I try to talk to you and you're just looking at your phone saying things in other languages.
But I think doing Duolingo is, you know, learning in other languages is also a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
Anyway, but I am also reading to the girls Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis by George Sayer. And
people may not know that Clive Staples Lewis was known to his friends as Jack.
Yeah. And George Sayer was an actual friend of C.S. Lewis. And so he has a very good, intimate, balanced biography of him. It's been really fascinating so far. I think Haley and I are enjoying it more than Taylor, but at least we're enjoying it.
Yeah, which is helpful for them because they read a lot of C.S. Lewis for school. So just kind of having that background, that personality behind the books they're reading.
Yeah, they read all the Narnia books. And
they also read Till We Have Faces.
Surprised by God.
I think at some point they read Mere Christianity. They read the Space Trilogy, I think,
in
high school. Yeah.
This is part of their omnibus curriculum that they do through Veritas Press, in case you're wondering.
So it's always just good to kind of know the author behind what you're reading and
reading. It's been really interesting. It's very thorough. We're not even to the point where he's a Christian yet. Yeah.
I haven't read that one. I'll have to read that one. I read the one by Alistair McGrath, which was very good. But yeah, when you guys are finished with that, I may pick it up.
Okay. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.